Hello, welcome everybody. This is Cheryl. We are here for my second webinar of this series, of which I think there will be three. Today is April 9th, 2019. And I'm so happy to be here with you to talk about self-doubt and self-trust and how they are actually interrelated. And we will get to all of that. So thank you so much for being here on the live call. And if you're listening afterwards, welcome to you as well. I start all of my calls for all of my courses and all of my small groups the same way, which is with 1 minute of silence as an opportunity to turn inward, to connect to your breath, to notice what's happening on the inside. We go through most of our day focusing on what's happening on the outside. But in order to cultivate self-trust and self-love and self-knowledge, we have to turn inward. And even though this is just 1 minute, it is an opportunity to turn inward. To close your eyes if that feels comfortable for you. And to gently and simply notice what is happening in the interior realms. So you will hear a gong at the beginning and the end of the minute, and then we will continue. I will tell you briefly about the structure of the call, which is that I will be speaking for about 25 to 35 minutes, somewhere in there, and then I will open it up to questions that you have, and that's our chance to connect directly. That's typically the juiciest part of the call, and I look forward to connecting with you there. If you think you have a question, you can press star 2 on your keypad, and then you will show up on my screen. So it takes a lot of courage to ask a question, especially when you know there are a lot of people listening. But just know that you are in a safe place, in safe hands, in a safe community. We are all struggling with the same issues worldwide. It's amazing that when it comes down to it, we are all very, very similar, especially those who are drawn to this work of anxiety, which is really the work of sensitivity and creativity. So this is a safe place, and I encourage you to speak up at that part of the call. And again, it's star 2. I also would like to encourage you to have a pen and paper ready or some way to take notes. We learn by listening, but we integrate at deeper levels when we write. And I will also be inviting you, if we have time, to do a short writing exercise before we open to questions. We'll see how the call unfolds. I'm going to start by reading a passage to you by Mark Nepo from his book, The Book of Awakening, which I highly, highly recommend if you don't have it on your bedside or in your bathroom. I recommend that you do, or something similar as a way to start your day. It is one of the tools that I emphasize over and over again in all of my courses, especially Trust Yourself, to begin and end your day by turning inward. And that means not reaching for your phone. We are in such liminal, vulnerable space when we come out of the unconscious of dream time and when we are entering back into it at the end of the day. And it is not the time to assault ourselves with the entire world of information that is available in our devices. It is the time to be gentle, to bring in nurturing and nourishing words, practices, mantras, prayers, to move your body in some way. There may be no action more effective toward growing your self-trust than beginning and ending your day in a nourishing way. So Mark Nepo is one of the ways that I begin my day. And this is from one of his passages called Loving Yourself, which of course is very closely related to trusting yourself. In loving ourselves, we love the world. For just as fire, rock, and water are all made up of molecules, everything, including you and me, is connected by a small piece of the beginning. Yet, how do we love ourselves? It is as difficult at times as seeing the back of your head. It can be as elusive as it is necessary. I have tried and tripped many times, and I can only say that loving yourself is like feeding a clear bird that no one else can see. You must be still and offer your palm full of secrets like delicate seed. As she eats your secrets, no longer secret, she glows and you lighten, and her voice, which only you can hear, is your voice bereft of plans. And the light through her body will bathe you till you wonder why the gems in your palm were ever fisted. Others will think you crazed to wait on something no one sees. But the clear bird only wants to feed and fly and sing. She only wants light in her belly. And once in a great while, if someone loves you enough, they might see her rise from the nest beneath your fear. In this way, I've learned that loving yourself requires a courage unlike any other. It requires us to believe in and stay loyal to something no one else can see that keeps us in the world, our own self-worth. What I love about Mark Nepo is that he has the courage to be vulnerable. He doesn't put himself on a pedestal like many spiritual teachers sometimes do and say, I have found the healing. I no longer struggle. I am there. I am always in a state of self-love or self-trust. I don't know that that exists. That ultimate state of being complete. It certainly doesn't exist in my life. And I don't know anybody, no matter how devoted they are to their practices and their healing, who lives in an uninterrupted state of self-love and self-trust and well-being. What I do know is that the more we grow these practices, the more quickly we can come back to center when we get off kilter, which is what I want to talk about today in my own life. So on the last round of Trust Yourself, I spoke in one of the calls about the cycles of self-doubt and self-trust that we go through. We have this idea in the culture that we can be perfectly healed from things like anxiety, that there is some mythical there, and we will never struggle again. But that's not the way it works. The way I understand it is that we go through these cycles of integration and decompensation, growth and decay, like everything we see in the natural world of which we are a part. So that self-trust and self-doubt are not opposites. They're not enemies of one another. They're actually partners. They are bedfellows. Just like love and fear are partners. We expect that when we are in love, there will be no fear. But as those of you know who follow my work, that is not the case. And in fact, we need the fear in order to grow the love. Just like we need the self-doubt in order to grow the self-trust. That in some way that our ego has a very difficult time understanding, the self-doubt, the fear, the anxiety, the resistance are actually working toward our wholeness and our healing. It sure doesn't feel that way. I know that. It doesn't feel that way. But this is how growth occurs. In layers and in spirals. So we address one layer of a wound or challenge and coast along for a while. Often thinking during these times, I'm healed. I'll never struggle with anxiety or self-doubt or lack of attraction or whatever the issue is ever again. But then, of course, life comes back in. And we're invited to deepen our growth. We don't grow when things are easy, when we're coasting along or hanging out in the eddies of life. Those are lovely times, and we must enjoy them fully. But it seems that we are wired to grow through difficult times. And I hit one of those times last month. I have spent a very long period of time in self-trust, years and years and years. It's not that doubt never entered the picture, but when it did, like the moment before hitting publish for my weekly blog post, every single week there was this quiet whisper, but I was able to brush it aside, barely even noticeable, hit publish, and put myself into the world every week for 10 years. And I've created and released over a dozen courses. Self-doubt was barely a wisp of a character throughout the ride. I've been so deeply motivated and inspired and called to do this work that whatever voices of self-doubt were there, I was able to brush aside. But I have a book coming out next month, and with this upcoming publication, I'm entering the world in a new way. And in doing so, I am opening myself up to possible scrutiny, likely some criticism. I'm making myself vulnerable in a whole new level. Basically, I'm coming out from the rock that I've lived under, and I've loved being under for the past 10 years since starting my blog. The rock of Boulder, Colorado, the rock of my studio on the edge of this creek, the rock of my safe community, which many of you who are on this call are a part of, kind, loving, compassionate people who are drawn to my work. And I'm now opening myself up to this broader world and to people who often are not led by kindness and especially seem to have free rein in this world of social media to speak unfiltered and to speak in unkind ways. And I am as sensitive as the rest of you. So when I think about the possible criticism, and especially the unconstructive criticism, because it's not that I need everybody to agree with everything that I'm writing about, but when I think about the meanness that's out there, I have felt scared and I felt self-doubt come in. And there was a part of me that wanted to say, forget it. But of course I couldn't. The book's coming down the chute. It is in motion, and there's nothing I can do about that. So this started last month when I immersed myself in Instagram, which I have avoided vehemently for all of these years, had no interest in it, was quite judgmental of it. But something compelled me to test out these waters, and I chose to see Instagram as a training ground for what's to come once my book is published, to dip my feet in. And what this past month has done for me as a result of this immersion, and then the fear that arose, has been to anchor me more fully into my practices, because I've seen without a shadow of a doubt that if my well of self isn't full, if my central column isn't solid and clear, if I'm not anchored into my prayer and meditation and journaling and body practices, I will fall into a pit. So this month of March was an invitation through the portal of self-doubt and anxiety to strengthen all of these daily practices, to know that they are non-negotiable at this point in my life. Let's take my journaling practice, for example. It usually takes me about 2 to 3 months to fill a journal. I filled an entire journal in the month of March. I wrote morning, noon, and night, and when I couldn't sleep, I wrote through the night. I wrote down my dreams. I wrote poetry. I wrote my thoughts and prayers and insights. I dialogued with my demons and inquired into what they needed. I haven't written that much since my 20s. When I was in my dark night of the soul and wrestling daily with the demons of anxiety. And I knew then in my 20s that I was being initiated then into doing the work that I'm doing now. And I know now that I'm being initiated again into the next stage of my work and my growth. And it's scary. And the fear is part of it. I don't know any way to step into risk and step into the next stage of our lives without fear being a part of it. So it's not about we do these practices and then we don't feel scared. No, we do these practices so that we can work with the fear and bring more compassion to it and let it guide us into what's next. And so what I'm saying here is that we can be knocked off our center, that we are supposed to be knocked off center. But when we have a solid sense of self, when we've spent time, real time, not just when we are suffering, but as a daily practice, the way we brush our teeth, the way we know that if we want to feel well in our bodies, we have to eat well and exercise. That these daily practices are non-negotiable for well-being. And when we spend the time nourishing those practices, filling the waters of the inner well, not only do we come back to center quickly, but the center point is strengthened each time we fall away and come back. So the falling away is not regression or relapse. As sometimes I read about on my blog or on the forums, I've relapsed. I don't see it that way. I see it as part of the plan. That beam of light that runs through the central channel grows brighter because we pour more attention there. Every practice and mindset that I teach in the Trust Yourself course is what I practice every day and what allows me to do the work that I do in the world and in my personal life, showing up with my full open-hearted self as much as I possibly can. It allows me to stay centered, and when I fall off, to rebalance fairly quickly. So this is what the course says. Many of you are already signed up, and I look forward to seeing you there. It's teaching these practices, exactly these. And there's one mindset that has rebalanced me more than any other. And it's one that I teach in the program in the email called Expression, Process, and Passion versus Outcome, Achievement, and Approval. It's one of the most important emails of the course. And in some ways, the entire course is based on this premise that when we learn to live from the inside out, from a place of fullness and service, focusing on how we can give instead of what we're going to get, the need for approval and perfectionism and caring what others think and the fear of failure fall away. So that particular email starts with this. When we're focused on outcome achievement and approval, we're externally referenced. And as soon as we're externally referenced, as soon as the focus is outside of us, we disconnect from our well of self and abdicate self-trust. Furthermore, when we're externally focused, we're in a state of trying to get something, usually approval, accolades, or a transitory sense of fullness. We're trying to fill up the bottomless bucket that we're holding out in front of us. So last month when the fear came up and the self-doubt came up, I started to tune into this place that was arising when I thought about my book coming out, really going into it deeply, not pushing it aside, but moving toward it, being curious about it. And I realized that a lot of it was coming from focusing on the externals, on the possible criticism, even the possible praise, that when I'm focused on anything out there, positive or negative, it separates me from my intention in writing this book, which is that it's an offering, that I am here to offer my message in whatever way I can and hope that it helps whoever may be helped by it, even if it's one person. So my practice now has become to feel the fear, but to immediately align with my intention, which is one of service. This requires letting go of control. It requires imagining all opinions. This is the visualization that I have, that all opinions, positive or negative, are moving past me as I am anchored in my center point. That this central column that I talk about, this well of self, is solid. It's a beam of impenetrable light. And whatever is out there that doesn't serve me moves past, rushes past. It has no place in me. It's not the purpose of this book. It doesn't serve the intention of offering whatever I can offer. So when I do that, I can return to my center point, which is both my well of self, watered by my practices, and my intention of giving. And when I do that, I immediately return to my seat of self-trust, and I can feel the fear, the nervousness, the anxiety, the self-doubt. It just falls away. It's like it falls into the waters of that well, into that pool. Because what I know, and I know this about all of you as well, is that it doesn't help to stay in our safe little corners of the world. That's playing it safe. And if I do that, I can't reach that one person that might be helped by this book or by this work. I am taking a risk, as we all do when we step outside of our comfort zones. And the greater the risk, whether it's in love or work or friendship or parenting, the greater the need to anchor into ourself and our practices. So you are all here because you're aware of the power of self-doubt in your life. And it is a powerful, powerful force. When I'm working with clients, I would say it is the most powerful energy field that prevents people from moving forward in their life in so many different realms, whether it's relationships, work, just your sense of self, decision-making process, parenting, having children or not having children. We make big decisions a lot. We make small decisions a lot. And if self-doubt is running the show, it is crippling. It's a showstopper. I've worked with so many people who have amazing ideas, who are so creative and innovative, And yet they're not able to bring those into the world because the self-doubt gets in the way. They haven't yet learned how to establish the practices enough to anchor into that well, that central beam of light, that column. All metaphors for the same thing, for that sense of self that knows that you are worthy. It's what Mark Nepo said in the quote. Right? It really comes down to that sense of worthiness, and the practices that we do are all aimed toward that, embracing who you are, knowing who you are, understanding how you are wired, bringing compassion and even celebration to how you are wired, so that when self-doubt comes in, as it always will, just like fear will always come into the realm of love, that you can see it as a messenger instead of as a bully and a showstopper. It's not about getting rid of the self-doubt. We can't do that. I don't believe that we are meant to do that. It's about seeing it as an ally. And the only way I know how to do that is to establish that firm and solid and fluid. I don't mean solid in the sense of impenetrable like a brick wall. I mean impenetrable in the sense of you will not be knocked over for long. I was knocked down for a little while there. It knocked me. There were a couple of comments on Instagram on one of my posts that just threw me. And I now thank that person because he is a voice that I will encounter as I go out further into the world. And in meeting that voice and knowing that underneath his aggression there was probably worlds and worlds of pain and hurt and self-doubt, in learning how to meet that, I grew a skill. It was like being a warrior. You're not tested until you go out into battle. So I had a taste of being on the battlefield, being outside of you all, you beautiful, sweet people. And some of you I don't know because I think some of you have come from Instagram. But many of you I do know. And in the 10 years of writing my blog, I have only not approved, I think, one comment, and I think there's, I don't know, 100,000 comments on my blog at this point. So, and only that one comment because it was mean-spirited. It was directed at me. It was personal. It was below the belt. And there's no place for that. So that tells you something about the safety of this community. Right? And it's not going to be that out in the world. But even though I was knocked down, right, my practices are so strong that I could see what was happening even as it was happening. It wasn't fun, believe me. But I was able to get back up pretty quickly. Now, there were nights when I was awake and I wrote through that and poetry came out. And a deepening of my the beings that I call around me through my imagination, through my visualizations. There was an extraordinary deepening that happened for me emotionally and spiritually. And I imagine it will continue to happen. I hope it does. Because if it doesn't, then we're not growing anymore. So I would like to take a couple of minutes, and again, if you have questions, I see just a couple of hands raised, which is great. We are about halfway through the call. I would like to take about 5 minutes to invite you into a writing exercise. If you have your pen and paper ready or your computer, whatever you write on is fine. I would like to invite you to pause and imagine. How would your life be different if self-doubt wasn't in the way? How would your life be different if self-doubt wasn't in the way? And let your imagination soar. Don't edit. Don't censor. No one will ever need to read this. You can rip it up as soon as you're done. Let yourself imagine yourself without self-doubt. Imagine how you would move forward in your life. What would you feel like? Imagine the self-doubt crumbling and the energy that is opened up. See yourself. Step into that vision. How would your life be different if self-doubt wasn't in the way? So I'm going to set a timer for, let's do 4 minutes. You will hear the gong at the beginning and the end, and let whatever needs to come out tumble forth. Perfectionists can wait at the door. No place for that voice here. About 40 seconds left. So start to complete this thought. Good. I will turn to you now. If anybody would like to share what they wrote, I would love to hear it. I'm sure others would as well. And if you would like to take what you wrote and rip it up in a million pieces, that is totally fine as well. Okay, I am turning to the first caller. I don't see a name, but the phone is from Massachusetts.
Hello?
So if it's you, you just... Yeah, it's you. Hello. If it's... When I come to you, all you have to do is speak up and say hello. That's the only way to know if it's you. But it's you. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I'm struggling with in a relationship, and I wanted to say, to be clear, it's not a romantic relationship. I don't know if that matters very much in the realm of self-trust, but just for a point of reference. I struggle with, I've had it happen a couple of times where I bond with the person and I love them. They even love me. That's not the problem, but I think we're on the same page, we're on the same wavelength, like the relationship means about the same. I know that, you know, very normal for relationships to, you know, one person might feel different than the other, that's fine, but like I think we're on the same wavelength page, and then suddenly, whoops, you know, it's like a 180 happens, and it's like, oh my gosh, we were totally on different pages, how did I miss that, you know? And I suspect it's a brand of an intrusive thought, even though it's not a what if kind of thing. It's kind of like the, how did I miss that? I feel like that is kind of a intrusive thought-esque thing where I say, like, I should have been more clear. And I really, part of me suspects that's not where the problem is, or even if it's a problem, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that that's from my lack of communication. Maybe it is, I don't know. That's where the self-doubt comes in. I get really, it's a rabbit hole where I go, what did I do wrong? And then, you know, and I was just realizing today that some of that is really that the people around me weren't very loving about when I found out that we were on a different page. They were like, well, you really, you know, one person said to me, you really expect people to understand how you're feeling a lot sooner than anyone would. And he said it in such an energy that I think it was really more about, I mean, I tell myself that it was more about him, like something was triggered for him, and I don't need to take that snapping energy on. But it really, really hurt, and I'm still healing. I'm still in the grieving process for a relationship that didn't turn into what I thought it already was. Like, for example, what it was I thought he called himself, he was like an uncle figure, and I thought everything was, and I was actually seeking paternal energy, and I thought that had been totally clear. And then suddenly when I was upset, he was like, oh, this is really about your dad. This isn't about me. And I'm like, what? I thought we already agreed that there was sort of an honorary parental thing going on. And he's like, oh, no. Like, he immediately backed away the minute that was really spelled out. And, of course, I see the red flags where it's like, oh, I could have been clearer here or there. But I also just think that's not really what it's about. But I am open to hearing any you know, guidance that you could give. I really want to help this wounded part of myself, so I don't know if I should say anything else.
Mm-hmm. So just so I'm clear, are you saying that this has been a pattern that you've noticed, or is this the first time that this has happened?
I mean, I don't know if it's a pattern. I mean, it's definitely happened at least one other time that I can think of distinctly where, I guess, yeah, maybe it is a little bit of that. I mean, two or three times tops, I think, where the other person was really surprised by the depth of the pain that I was in or the depth of the love that I felt. They were all like, wait, what? Like, you know, there's always a moment where they kind of back up and go, what? Like, that's how important this is to you? Whoa, it's not that important to me. I mean, whether they said it outright or not, sometimes they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always just like, what did I miss? Because I think of myself as a pretty attuned person, pretty sensitive person, pretty good listener, pretty good, just, you know, good at seeing where we're at and all that, you know, it's almost like the minute I start to trust it, something goes wrong. Like, I don't mean to sound, that sounds really cynical, but it's like, it feels like the minute I lean into tenderness or lean into softness, then something will, it goes, you know, something gets really altered shortly thereafter, which I see as part of the problem too, is that I say I really want tenderness and softness, and then I'm actually afraid to have it because I haven't because I haven't gotten it very much, so I get kind of scared when it comes up, which I know is very normal. You know, I hear that from a lot of people. And it's even hard to even say that I want it, and that's what I'm growing on right now. It's just even right now, I said, I want tenderness and softness. I just said it out loud. Good for me, right? You know? And it's like, it's really hard to even say it because I haven't had that modeled or had other people say, I want that too with you. You know, it hasn't been a lot of reciprocation. So anyway, it's very broad, but I don't.
So,
yeah.
Okay. No, that's helpful. Thank you. So I just first want to say that that's a very painful situation to be in when you've made yourself vulnerable and you've thought that there was some agreement and you were on the same page and then the person turns around and says, what? No, that's not where I'm at all. That's so disruptive. That's so, we're so vulnerable in relationships of all kinds. That when somebody turns away like that and doesn't meet the need or, you know, thinks that you're on the same page, but then you're not. It's just so, so very, very painful. And I would encourage you to stay with the grief and stay with the loss. I think your instincts were right on in the beginning of your question when you said, I think this is kind of an intrusive thought. When you go up into your head, you start to ask, how did I miss that? And trying to figure out and trying to problem solve and trying to analyze, then you are up in your head space.
Yeah.
The wisdom comes from the body. So you may get some insight into some of those questions, but not from pounding yourself about it. Right? The insight and the wisdom comes from being in the experience of it, being in the heartache, being in the disappointment, being with those very, very raw, core, painful feelings. And from that place, if you can meet those with a tremendous amount of self-compassion, meet those feelings and meet them with curiosity, then some insight might arise. And you may see something about yourself or about the other person. But it's coming from a different place.
Right. Right. And then, I mean, I don't know, just the minute you said that, I was like, okay, so, and this probably is my head, it was like, okay, so does that mean, you know, let's say I'm with the pain, I'm with all the, I'm trying to be as compassionate as possible. You know, one of the fears now is like, oh gosh, how can I stop this from happening again? Does it work, like, once I'm with the pain, does that mean that once it's actually processed and I've actually, you know, I've owned that part of myself. I haven't left it alone. I haven't left it to my head pain. You know, I've actually owned it. Does that mean that as I proceed in future relationships, because I do still want what I thought I had with this other person, when I seek it in other relationships, it won't necessarily, you know, I'm not guaranteed to have it again because I've actually owned already the part that, you know, initially experienced this pain that I'm carrying around, you know, because that's why I've...
Yeah.
I imagine that's why it's a pattern, because it's like I'm probably carrying it on some level. So once I put it in a different place, it'll... I mean, does that make sense? I guess I'm just speaking for the fear
possibly,
that it means.
Quite possibly, yes. Yeah, the fear voice wants to problem solve for the future and wants to circumvent and safeguard against future pain, always.
Right.
That's the entire point of the ego. That's its entire mission in life.
Right.
Is to try to prevent future pain. And so it thinks, if I can figure this out, if I can answer these questions, then I can avoid this happening again. There are no guarantees. All we can do is be with the experience and tend to ourselves with as much compassion and curiosity as we can. And yes, through that does come so much healing that we tend not to keep repeating the same pattern.
Right. So the goal isn't...
But it doesn't come from, if I do this, then I won't repeat the pattern again.
Right. So that can't be the goal. I'll miss it already if I make that the goal. Okay. Right. Okay.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
The goal is to attend to yourself, is to be with yourself.
Right, and not future plans.
Is to meet these places and, everything that it's triggering, everything that it's opening up inside of you, everything that it's unleashing, current and past.
Right.
And so it may be that this experience then helps you heal from those past experiences when that has happened, and even earlier in life,
right,
when there was, you know, a hope, an agreement with whoever, with parents, with friends, with teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So many times in life when we are disappointed, when we are let down, when we think it's going to meet this need or be one thing and then it's not.
Right. So my intention should be to just be with that pain as opposed to, I'll do it this way so that won't happen again. That's already going in the wrong
direction. Exactly.
That's already faulty, correct? Yeah.
Yes. It won't land you where you want to be, because then your intention is out future based instead of being here in the present.
Right. Really seeing the pain for what it is. Yeah.
Yes. Makes sense?
I think so. Thank you very much.
Yes, you are so welcome. Thank you for being the first brave caller.
Sure.
Okay, excellent. Let's move on to caller number 2. I won't possibly be able to get to all of you. I see many, many hands raised, and it's an extremely full call. For those of you who I don't get to, if you are not signed up for the Trust Yourself course, I encourage you to sign up, and you will get a lot of support there. This is caller number 2. If you think you may have been the second person to raise your hand, please speak up. You are now unmuted. Are you there?
Hello?
Caller number 2?
Hello?
Yes. Hi, it's you.
Oh, okay, great.
Hi.
Hi. So I have, my self-doubt right now is manifesting mostly in my relationship, and also I'm in grad school for social work, and just in making choices around that. But for my relationship, I have found that going, you know, out of my head is really important, but it's like, it feels impossible sometimes. And when I want to go into my body, I get confused about what that means, because in my head that means going into my body basically means like a blank slate. Like I just am not, I'm ignoring everything my head has been saying. And I'm like, because when I'm not worrying, then everything is fine, but it's not actually fine because I still have the underlying worries.
But it is actually fine. When you're not worrying, everything is fine.
Yeah, I just feel like
go ahead.
I have, like, you know, stories from my childhood and my, you know, watching my parents and all of these stories around being scared of love and scared of opening myself up. And of, I've opened myself up, but I still feel a wall. And today I was speaking to my therapist, who like basically was like, well, you either have to break down that wall or you're going to turn him away or you have to get out of your head. And I was like, but how? Like that's not like, that black and white thinking isn't helpful for me. That's like why I'm here in the first place. And I just like getting out of my head, it always is temporary.
Temporary meaning what?
Like, I always end up back there.
Mm-hmm. So you can drop into your body for, what, a minute, an hour?
There was one time where I did it for a month and a half, but since then it's been, like, maybe a minute.
Wow. So you had a month and a half of being in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
I realized I hadn't been worried in a while, and it was over my winter break from school. And I sometimes when I realize I'm not worried about something, then it makes me worried. And, and like, I've read all of your blogs, and I feel like I'm just constantly thinking about my, you know, my relationship, and should I stay? Every day it's an evaluation. Should I stay or should I go? And every day I'm like reading the blog, and every day I'm like trying to journal and meditate. And it's like, I put so much thought to it that it's like so hard for me to step away.
Are you journaling about that question? Should I stay or should I go? Or are you going underneath that?
I don't know that I've done that. I've done like pros and cons of our relationship and like my stream of conscious, like the thoughts I'm having.
Mm-mm. That's not going to get you anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's the cardinal rule about journaling when you have relationship anxiety is not to journal about the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There is no more new information that you are going to reveal. You have reviewed everything. You have scoured the relationship 1,000 times with a fine-tooth comb. There's nothing left to explore there. Not only is it a dead end, but it's you're feeding the fire of the anxiety. Journaling will only be effective if you can go underneath it, steer your mind away from the relationship anytime it starts to go there, to say, we are not going there, mind. I'm going to come into what really is needing my attention, which is what's ever living in my heart, in my body. You are capable of being in your body. You were there for 1.5 months. That's a long time. That's a great foundation, a baseline. You know that that's possible for you. So if everything that you're doing, the meditation, the journaling, the therapy, is to try to answer that question, should I stay or should I go, you will spin around forever.
Yeah. So what should I be addressing?
You should be addressing what you're avoiding with that question. That question is an intrusive thought. It's a protection against what's living in your body, against the pain of life, against old pain, against vulnerability, against loneliness. That has nothing to do with your relationship.
So when the question, when I want to journal, it should have nothing to do with that, and instead should be something like just journaling about my fear of making the wrong decision. Or no,
yes,
that's still connected.
It's still connected.
So you
could explore that, but that's still in your head. The question is, how am I feeling right now? If I weren't obsessed with this thought, what would I actually be feeling? What's living in my body? Do you have the relationship anxiety course?
No. I want to take it so badly. I'm trying to figure out how to pay.
Okay, well, when you can do it, it will help you enormously.
Do you think
it will guide you into what needs your attention?
Would the trust yourself one be helpful for the same type of thing? Okay.
Yes.
So it's kind of just journaling should be entirely out of my head.
Yes, we want to be careful with the word should, but yes, it is more effective when you can drop underneath thoughts, when you can make it active and imaginative and real in your body and your felt experience, and not about your relationship. No more pros and cons lists.
Yeah, I just like don't even know where to start.
With the journaling, well, the trust yourself course will teach you where to start. But in the meantime, or if you can't take it right now, to start with imagining being a young child, being 6 or 7, what you wished somebody had asked you about yourself, how you wish your inner world and your experience would have been met. That's what we are doing essentially with the journaling, is turning inward into our long forgotten places, into our younger selves, into the places that nobody inquired about, and meeting them and being that parent that is truly interested in your inner world.
I'm aware I don't want to take up too much time, but I think this might be pertinent. Like, this weekend, I was talking to my dad about my mom, when I was young, was in an inpatient, like, psychiatric ward what he said was a week. If you would have asked me, I thought it was a month. I didn't know. And he told me, he said, I think that was one of the most traumatizing things from your childhood. And it's something that I didn't even think about until very recently. And he said, you clung to me for dear life. And I think that that's where a lot started for me.
Yes. So your journaling can be in meeting that young girl who is you, who still lives in you, who is so terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And time traveling back to her and meeting her and inquiring and being with her and holding her. Doing that for 5 minutes would be infinitely more effective than anything that you've been doing in your journaling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you. Okay. We are probably going to go a little bit over time. So I will go to the next caller here. I don't see a city, so you're just going to have to pipe up and see if it's you. If you raised your hand, say hello. Hello.
Yes. Yeah. How long is it?
Is that you?
No, I think it will be done. Yeah. I think it's like 1 hour.
Hello?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that person is responding, so I'm going to go to the next caller. Looks like the phone is in Virginia. Not sure where you are, but the phone's in Virginia.
Hi, this is Stephanie. Is it me?
Hi, Stephanie. Yes, it is. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. So I would
you
like
are
to share
welcome.
I'd like to share what I wrote, which kind of ends up being a question from the prompt that we had.
Beautiful. So let's hear it.
Okay. So I would probably be more willing to take risks, put myself out there, try bigger life changes, such as different career, living somewhere different. I would probably trust myself more. And what I know to be true. But what I think is true sometimes is not. Sometimes when I think I've figured something out, soon I am learning something new or a different perspective on what I thought I knew. Or sometimes I heal something, such as in therapy or in a coursework, and now my perspective has changed again. How do I trust myself when what I know to be true changes through time, through my cycle, through understanding different perspectives? And period.
Mm-hmm. Great question. So I'm going to put it back to you and just see what might arise from your place of wisdom. How might you answer that question? How can I trust myself when what I know to be true changes over time and with shifting perspectives and different cycles of my life?
I think there... sometimes can be some core truths that are underneath maybe some of the anxiety and underneath some of the disconnection from my own body, disconnection from my own needs. So I think there could be some underlying truths that aren't actually changing, but are always there, but just not necessarily accessed.
Yes. That's exactly what I would have said. And so the reason why I posed it back to you is because we have access to our own wisdom so much more than we think we do. Right? And it's part of how we advocate self-trust, is thinking that somebody else carries the wisdom. You answered your own question beautifully, wisely, that there are some core truths underneath the anxiety. Those don't change a whole lot. We might have a different perspective on them, but they are fundamentally the same core truths. And a seasoned mind and a wise mind allows and welcomes those shifting perspectives and expanding our mindsets. That's the sign of somebody who is truly interested in growth, who isn't so fixed and this is the way it is, that we allow ourselves to grow with time and to see things in different ways and in different lights. There are a few core truths, I think, in life, and then the rest is open for debate. But we don't make our decisions in life. We make our decisions from a core sense of self, not necessarily a core sense of truth, as in this is the way it is. And I can only make decisions based on this particular way that it is. We make decisions based on this is how it is right now, and this is how I know myself right now. What I hear in the question is what came up with the first caller. It's this part of the ego that wants to safeguard against future loss and risk. I can't make decisions unless I know that it's coming from a place of absolute truth, because then I might make a wrong decision. Right? But the mindset of self-trust, it's the mindset of the entire course, is there are no mistakes. There is only growth. There is no real failure. Or there is failure, and that's how we learn. But we can't avoid those potholes. They are part of how we grow, a significant part of how we grow. Okay?
Yes, that was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Okay, thank you all for being here. I'm sorry I did not have a chance to connect with all of your questions, but thank you for those who brought your questions, for the rest of you for holding space. There are a few spots left in this upcoming round of Trust Yourself. It starts on Saturday. I will send out the final email announcement on Friday, and I would love to see you there. You will hear a gong at the beginning and the end of our final minute. This is another time to turn inward, to integrate, to breathe into what you heard, what you learned, to note any aha moments, to tend to any places of sadness or pain or uncomfortable feelings that may have arisen. And I encourage you to stay longer than a minute if your day allows.